For Sounds of Dissent, I'm Amy Grunder. As the Federal Communications Commission readies to vote on a proposal to remove the remaining shreds of what it calls outdated restrictions limiting media monopoly, public interest advocates eked out a small victory this week. Public outcry around the FCC move pushed the agency to postpone its vote pending public review and comment on the impact of the proposed changes on media diversity. My guest is Joseph Torres, the Senior External Affairs Director of the nonpartisan advocacy group Free Press and the author of News for All the People, The Epic Story of Race and the American Media. That was published in 2011. He serves on the board of directors of the Center for Media Justice and the National Association of Latino Independent Producers and is himself a former journalist. Welcome, Joseph Torres, to our program.
Well, thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure to have you join us. Thank you for joining us. There's been a bit of pushback on this new rule from Congress, from civil rights groups, from public interest groups like your own, and right. from the courts. What's all the fuss about?
So this story is right now, if I could just take a step back for a second, this fight we're having over media consolidation is one that's been going on for quite a while. And during the Bush administration back in 2003, the FCC, under former Chairman Michael Powell, tried to implement massive deregulation of our media system in local communities. He was proposing basically that one company can own the daily newspaper, three TV stations, eight radio stations, and a cable franchise, all in, like, in the largest markets, and variations in that in smaller markets. The courts threw that out in 2004, saying it didn't make any sense. You failed to give a legal rationale to justify this rule change. And you have failed to address the impact of any of this rule change on ownership of broadcast stations by women and people of color. So 2007, the Bush FCC once again tries to relax ownership rules. This time they say we're going to do a smaller version of it. We're going to allow a newspaper to own TV and broadcast stations in the largest markets. Now, Democrats opposed this. Senator Obama opposed this. Hillary Clinton, Senator Clinton opposed this. Senator Joe Biden. The Senate actually passes a resolution to overturn this FCC's decision. We and my organization sues the FCC. We went in court. We argue on the case that the FCC has failed once again to address the impact of its rule change on ownership by women and people of color. Now, women and people of color only own, at the time, 3% of all full-power television stations. People of color only own 3% of full-power television stations, women 6%. And here we are again in 2012. Under the Obama administration, the FCC is basically trying to adopt the very rule that Senator Obama opposed to Senator Clinton, allowing newspapers to own TV stations in the same market. So this would look like potentially in the largest markets, you can have a newspaper potentially owning a television station and radio stations in the same market, and the cable franchise potentially all in the same market. And this is what we oppose.
I wonder if you could give us a snapshot of, well, you did give us a brief snapshot of media ownership by communities of color, by women, right. by minorities. But, do individuals, for the most part, most broadcast licenses are not held by individuals. So what do you mean when you focus on those percentages? In other words, most of these companies are owned by big corporations, or most of the licenses.
Or controlled is who controls them, right? And where is identifiable, like which companies are owned or controlled by people of color? Just 3% of all, 3.6% now of all TV stations are owned by people of color, and is less than, I believe, 7% now of all stations owned by women. And the thing is, one of the things that, and it's going back to the original question, and I hope that a little back history made sense, trying to put it into the overall larger context of how long this has been going on and how long we've been fighting for media diversity, for the FCC to address this. When the courts, in 2011, told the FCC you have failed to address the issue of diversity in the media, the FCC, through the years, has had inaccurate numbers inaccurate figures on what is the racial and ethnic and gender makeup of its broadcast license holders. Imagine that. The FCC, the federal agency, has no idea who owns local TV stations, like what is the racial and gender ethnic makeup of them. So they finally came out with a study, not a study, with its latest data just in November, right? And it showed 3.6% of all full power stations owned by people of color, and women less than 7%, but yet it's not taking these numbers into account when it's looking to change the rule. And we argue that, for instance, 40% of all stations owned by people of color would be impacted by this rule change. And what consolidation does, though, it makes it harder for other voices. It makes it harder for people to be able to buy TV stations. Women and people of color have less economic means to be able to buy a broadcast station. This is why there's this media inequality that exists today. And what we're saying is the FCC is only going to deepen that media inequality by continuing to go down a path of further consolidation. At a time when the president, when he ran for election the first time around, he very much ran on a platform that he wanted to increase diversity of broadcast ownership and deal with the issue of media consolidation. He had his feet firmly planted on the ground as opposed to this. He actually wrote op-ed pieces about the importance of media diversity and against media concentration. But yet, his own administration, FCC chairman, is going full steam ahead despite the growing opposition in Congress. More than 10 senators have voiced the opposition to this civil rights community. But yet, this chairman is moving forward, and the one person we know is definitely going to benefit is Rupert Murdoch and News Corp, because News Corp, Rupert Murdoch has been making, it's been all sorts of headlines that he wants to buy the Los Angeles Times, Chicago Tribune. Relaxing his rules will pave the way for him to do that.
You've written a book called, co-written a book with Juan Gonzalez, News for All the People, The Epic Story of Race and the American Media. There's a related article to that book. A related piece in another book, I'm sorry, I'm going to not recall the name of that right now, where you wrote about the history of U.S. policy and how much, the history of U.S. media policy and how much of a role that racism played in both the development of the policy and the resulting historic segregated media landscape that resulted. Could you say something about that
history? Yeah, you know, so when we think about media today, I mean, people tend to not think about media in terms of policy. They tend to think of media about the harms it does, for sure. I mean, this is how we're all concerned about the media because of the images that are portrayed of different communities, how issues are covered. What we try to make in the argument in the book that just like any other issues you deal with, whether it's education, environmental, there's all sorts of structural reasons for the inequality that exists in our society, and media is no different. And so when we talk about media, what we try to discuss in the book and address is why is it that marginalized communities, people of color, do not basically control the mass dissemination of our own image, that we own very little media properties. And we talk about the history of policy. And I think what's important about policy is that whenever a new media system develops as a result of change in technologies, technology comes along and it creates the telegraph, then radio gets developed, and cable television, and now is the internet. Whenever technology changes, new industries emerge. And when these new industries emerge, there's always a potential there's always a potential for new voices to be able to participate. And when the new industries emerge, the government has to make a decision. Does it regulate each new industry to allow the greatest number of voices to participate, or does it turn over control of each media system to the hands of a few? And this, and when I feel, I mean corporate gatekeepers. And throughout the history of our media policy, when new technologies come along, it's turned over control to whether it's Western Union, when radio comes along, it's NBC and CBS. Those very first radio owners, those big networks become the owners of the first television stations, you know, the major television stations. And cable is totally concentrated in your local communities. You're lucky if you have a choice of one cable system in your market to choose from, maybe two. That's not much competition. And now the internet, which is the greatest decentralized communication network to date, it's a fight globally around the world, but also within the United States, to make sure the internet remains a open communication network that allows a free flow of information to public have access to.
Who are the players in that particular struggle, and how is that struggle playing out now? This struggle, sometimes it seems like it's between the government and powerful groups. Sometimes it seems like the governments allied with powerful groups. Can you break that out for us?
Yeah, so in the United States, right? If you think about the internet is this decentralized communication network. But to access the internet, you need a broadband provider, right? You need a telecom provider, whether it's Verizon, AT&T, or Comcast, to connect you to the internet. And because they have, you have very few choices in who you can actually. Most people only have two choices of internet providers in their community. Some folks have one, some actually have none. But because they have that, because they're the gatekeeper connecting you to the internet, there's tremendous incentive to them to manipulate what you can see and not see, to favor certain content over others. So if you're Comcast and you just bought NBC, you have tremendous incentive to make sure people have access. And remember, Comcast, NBC, Universal, they own movie studios, television networks. They also produce a ton of content. So you have the ability to say, to favor your content, to make sure the public has easy, fast access to your content. And meanwhile, other content, whether you get it through Netflix or whatever, or through different other content that they don't control, they can basically put up basically roadblocks, slow your ability to get to that content. And so by playing favorites and who people can access at faster speeds, they manipulate your ability to see what you want. And of course, if you're at home at your computer with your broadband connection and stuff is loading slow on your computer on one particular website, you're not going to go to that site. You're going to go to the site that actually gives you better service. And so this is what the fight over what's often called network neutrality, internet freedom is about in this country. Then also you have an issue I work less on, but it's still equally important, is what are the Googles of the world doing when it comes to searches and how they manipulate traffic, the Facebooks of the world? How are these internet companies manipulating the content that you see? And there's all sorts of issues of privacy and how are they, does the information that you put online, people have less and less control over that? So there's a ton of issues, but in one of the primary issues that we talk about in the United States is the ability to access the content of your choice, and that's the issue of openness.
And this is also caused by the vertical integration of these companies. So they create content, they create the delivery of the content, they create other products that are probably advertised in addition to that content.
Exactly. And so, for marginalized communities, for people of color, the internet is the lowest barrier of entry to actually have a media presence, to have a voice. And so this has been critically important for folks to get the message out about important social issues. So imagine a world in which we don't have that openness anymore. The openness is gone. And are we just going to turn the internet to what cable television looks like, for example, or something like that?
How would that happen, Joseph Torres?
Well, that would happen just, that would happen. That would happen with, as I mentioned, is that the ability to manipulate what sites people are able to get to at faster speed. So let's say I'm a small business owner and I want to create the next Netflix. How are you able to get started in a world in which you're unable to attract traffic, right, customers, because people are going to have a harder time getting to your site? And so, if you look at any websites, if you look at the most popular sites in most local communities, it still tends to be your traditional media sites, right? So it's really hard to break through that echo chamber if you don't have a level playing field.
Is there evidence that companies, that cable companies and internet companies actually have slowed the content of or limited access to websites that they don't favor.
Well, we had a case in so that's a good question. So we've had a case. The most famous case has been Comcast a couple of years ago the FCC found that it was blocking people's ability to use BitTorrent. Now BitTorrent is a file sharing program that's often used to share movies and other content of like a heavy bandwidth kind of content, and the reason they were blocking the people's ability to use this application to share content was because it's a competitor to their own services. So that was an example where they were blocking content. They were blocking the ability of people to use this application to share content for years, and they lied about it. And mm-hmm. So the reason why there has been right now this the debate is actually happening as we speak. The FCC passed open internet rules back in 2010 a couple of years ago that basically set some sort of like basic open internet rules that we think didn't go far enough, that was a little too weak. And Verizon is actually challenging that in court. And one of his legal rationales is actually saying, Verizon, is that that internet providers like them are no different than a newspaper. Like a newspaper can choose what content it wants to publish, what content it wants to publish in the paper and favor some content over others. They have the same right, and they possess the same right, no different than a newspaper editor or a newspaper publisher. Now imagine that world. Imagine that argument actually wins.
So they're editors of the internet, basically.
Yes, yes. They're basically saying they're no different than any editors or newspaper that chooses to publish some content over another.
Except we're talking about all the content published by contributors to the web.
Right. Right. And so it's like, if that argument was to win the day, how would the internet change dramatically? So the reason we haven't seen these over the top, trying to find the right word, abuses, is because there has been some sort of the issue of network neutrality, the issue of open internet has basically been the fundamental principle of how the internet developed, right? And over the past over the past decade, let's say, the internet providers are trying to chip away at this basic principle that's been how the internet's always functioned. And they're trying to do that, like I've mentioned before, how whenever technology changes, there's an attempt to change laws to favor big businesses and corporations' control over a media system. And that is the fight we're having right now.
What about intergovernmental policy? There's been some news breaking about the involvement of the United Nations in meetings of United Nations agency dealing with the internet.
So this has been going on in Dubai it's going on now. The UN, the International Telecommunications Union, is a UN agency that's helped build broadband out to developing countries. There's a push by some countries that they believe the United States has too much control over internet governance, so they're trying to have the UN basically set some sort of standards. You know, as countries share traffic, there has to be some sort of standards of how the internet works, right, and how traffic is shared. And so there's a push to have the UN be the official body that basically helps to set this internet governance. Now, countries don't have to abide by treaties, right? But it is what was concerning for a lot of people is that the way in which this is being discussed in Dubai is really behind closed doors. Only governments have the ability to vote on this. There's lack of transparency in what's actually trying to be proposed by other countries. So right now it is being viewed and written that, you know, obviously like the United States is pretty unified. They're against what's happening, and internet companies in this country are too. And there's a concern that the ITU may bless bad behavior, you know, by countries like Russia or China to try to spy and censor content on the internet. We're just arguing that there needs to be greater transparency about what is actually happening at the ITU to actually know what are the proposals being proposed. But at the same time, too, we have to also remember that in this country, too, it's, the telecom companies have been a part of surveillance, you know, of our own people, you know, with when it comes to, spying on Americans. It's happening as part of our war on terror, let's say, right? So there needs to be greater vigilance. So there's, all over the world, there's greater, more and more vigilance. There needs to be greater vigilance on not just what's happening with the UN and what's happening in all these countries in which people are using the internet to try to fight for reforms or against totalitarian governments. But we all, but even in democratic countries too, and how the internet is, how internet works as well. So there needs to be greater transparency and greater awareness because how the internet, the basic governance of the internet at home and abroad.
We're going to have to end here, Joseph. I'm so sorry. We're out of time.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you for having me on. I hope that made sense, but that's basically what's happening in Dubai right now.
It did make sense. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for joining us. We've been speaking with Joseph Torres, the Senior External Affairs Director of the nonpartisan advocacy group Free Press and the co-author of News for All the People, The Epic Story of Race and the American Media, out in 2011. You can inform yourself more about these media reform efforts at freepress.net. And that concludes our program today. You've been listening to Sounds of Dissent, airing every Saturday from 11 to 1 on WZBC in Newton 90.3 FM and streaming worldwide at WZBC.org.